morning, everyone. I am Ian Williams from the president of the Foreign Press Association on this bright, sunny, spring-like day. Not quite as spring-like as in Marcella's background. She has a time machine advancing her background to spring. But spring is in the air. I've been sneezing all morning, so I think they've started pollinating. But amongst the other things that's getting pollinated is the DeSantis Florida campaign, which we want to look at. So the big issue is the diversity, equity, and inclusion buzz, which is up there with the critical race theory and the transgender rights issue, guaranteed to annoy people in far greater proportion than they actually merit. Well, these are obviously strong things, but the people who get it under their skin blow them up out of all proportion and assume every mote is a beam in their eyes. And amongst the issues, Ron DeSantis, who is good chance of beating Trump. And the question then is, some people both in and out the Republican Party suspect that he might even be worse than Trump, because Trump is lazy, inattentive, and intellectually sloppy and prejudiced, whereas DeSantis is calculatingly intelligent and uses prejudice as a political weapon. It's not a reflex. And that's one of the issues we want to come into. Marcella's Argentinian, and she knows about populism, I'm sure, as a result of this, and has been studying this. Because one of the paradoxes we need to look at is, why is it that all over the country, somebody who is a party that is basically trouncing Hispanics as immigrants and lazy no-gooders and sort of sucking on the teeth of the public purse, getting votes in places like Texas and Florida? And DeSantis is specialized. It's not just the Cuban exception, where the Cuban exiles are, guaranteed to vote for anything, hanging, shooting, flogging, and anything that dissociates themselves from Castro. So why does he keep winning in states with a large Latin and Black population? And one of the things I think we want to discuss here is just how successful he's been at pushing a wedge between the different ethnic voting blocks and peeling them off again from the former assured democratic majority. Whether it's justified or not, that's what's been happening in terms of electoral politics. So, Marcella, do you want to lead in on this and tell us how how it looks at the moment? And every day there's more bad news pours in. I'm not sure that having Nikki Haley, the subcontinental supporter of Modi, in the race is going to help much at all.
Not at all. I have my theory about Nikki, but we're not going to get into her now. But first of all, thank you so much, Ian, for inviting me and being here again with you and the Foreign Press Association is a real honor. And, you pose a great question, and it's a question that I ask myself many times, particularly also with Donald Trump and the Republican Party in general, why Latinos are still voting for the party. And in the case of DeSantis, he just had an election. He won by 19 percent points. Trump only got a 3% point advantage. But interestingly enough, when it comes to Latinos, he won by 57% of the Latino votes, and not only Cubans, but also Puerto Ricans. So what we do oftentimes is we let our own ideas and feelings really take over, and we cannot see the entire picture. So what we have to do, and it's very important, and the same happened with Trump. I remember clearly before he won the election, people will say he cannot win. He's this, he's that, he's a racist. It's impossible for him to win. And we were tracking his numbers, and we were seeing that he could win, and he was, it was very close, but he had a good chance to win. And when I will say that, people will attack me, like I wanted him to win. But we have to know the reality, because otherwise we're going to have surprises, like in the case of Trump. But in the case of DeSantis, if we look at Florida in particular, because it's a case where Latinos really went for him, we're looking at one part of the equation. We're looking at, you know, DEI, CRT, and all the things that he's doing attacking minorities. But minorities are also very pragmatic. So at the same time that he's doing this, he's also announcing all these measures, which he's done in the past, you know, cutting taxes, making sure, you know, sending all these, announcing all these measures that he's going to do to help, you know, people in general, bringing down crime in a country where crime is going up in most places. At the same time, we have to see what the Democrats are doing. And I always say the Democrat is like a boyfriend that promises you all the time, you know, we're going to get married, I'm going to bring you flowers, we're going to go on a trip, but never delivers. And then you have the Republicans that tell you from the beginning, you know, I'm not going to marry you, I'm not going to bring you flowers, I'm not going to do anything for you. So I'm appalled that having had so many Democrat presidents, we have not have been able to pass immigration reform. So, you know, it's not that the Democratic Party has done so much for Latinos, and this can bring a negative reaction from some people, but it's the truth. So when you, you know, if you are a Latino, a struggling Latino, you have three jobs, you know, immigration reform is not really going anywhere, but you have some benefits in terms of, you know, taxes and the economy, then you start thinking, who am I going to vote for? I'm going to vote for the one that gives me the most. So it's not as irrational as we think it is. So we have to get into the mindset of, you know, the Latinos who are voting for someone like DeSantis and really understand it. I was watching yesterday one of the announcements he gave about, you know, having the largest, I think, cut taxes in the last 40 years. So if you hear that speech, he didn't mention at any point DEI, he didn't mention minorities. It was all about the economy, about, you know, how he's benefiting families. As you know, Latinos have tend to have large families. And, you know, he was going on and on about all these benefits. So if you are a Latino, you start looking at that and you say, well, you know, this is great. This is going to be a benefit for me. I do not agree, they may say, with all the things he's doing in other areas, but this is better than, you know, other politicians are doing. So I think what DeSantis is doing, he's playing at two sides. On one hand, he's playing with all the DEI and CRT into the 70% of his Republican base, because he needs to get to win the primaries. And it's very hard to win a primary if you're a moderate. Not that he's a moderate, but, you know, you cannot win. So he's looking at that. But at the same time, he's not Donald Trump. He's not someone that tends to insult people just for the sake of insulting people. And that's where I agree with you. He's much more dangerous in the sense that he's more pragmatic. He seems to have a plan. He's very disciplined. So at the same time, he's giving all these arguments and doing things and showing how his state has been, you know, the one that did the best, you know, in his view, after COVID-19, the one that is doing the best.
Didn't they have the highest casualty rate in the country?
Yeah, I'm saying what he pictures it, because he's measuring by economic terms. So he's saying this is the state that is having the largest number of, you know, small businesses being created, and businesses being created more than California. So I could see him in this speech. It's very interesting how he's positioning himself towards, is something that he's going to use when he wins the primaries, right? And he's going to try to say, look at what's happening here in Florida. I'm attracting, you know, all these people are coming here before, and he said this, before people will come here to retire. They're still coming to retire, but I'm attracting also families, young families who are coming to the state. So what he's saying is nothing like Trump. You know, people compare him to Trump. Trump will be always insulting someone, making fun of a journalist, insulting someone because, you know, a woman because she was fat or ugly in his view, is not what the sun is at. So I think, so that's why also what is happening is that he's attracting a lot of the money power. And as you know, Ian, he has more than 42 billionaires supporting him right now. And prior to, you know, like 1 or 2 years ago, he only had 17. So it keeps, you know, growing. That's something significant. The other thing that I'm very surprised myself as being a strong advocate of DEI is that I haven't heard too many voices coming up. You know, I haven't heard corporate America coming up and saying, you know, what the governor is doing is totally irrationally go against our values. I haven't seen that. You know, there's some demonstrations taking place, but I haven't seen the big leadership coming up and complaining. Where is the business roundtable, you know, in all of this? I haven't heard anything from them. So, you know, do they agree with him? Are they scared of him because what happened with Disney? I don't really know, but I'm very surprised by the fact that we haven't heard much from...
Not so surprised. They did not actually... They didn't appear on the barricades about Trump either when he was taking disastrous decisions. And I think the point is that if some minorities have to suffer so that he can win the votes and put through a totally pro-business agenda, so what? It's an entirely rational, if absolutely unethical, calculation. And he is no doubt at all calculating, because these issues that he's gone on, Trump discovered these... how should we say, instinctively.
Yeah.
He's a natural. I mean, he was playing by ear and he was playing really well. And I do believe that Governor DeSantis has worked out and he's got focus groups sitting there and they're working out which buttons can we push.
Definitely.
Get the vote, regardless of the consequences.
Yes, and he had pushed a lot of buttons that didn't come through, thank God, because, you know, he was stopped. But, you know, he had a lot of measures that he tried to take, like, you know, the anti after the assassination of George Floyd, he did the anti demonstration. He tried to pass an anti demonstration law in his state and it was stopped. He also tried to pass something against tech companies, social media that you know, were attacking Trump and other conservatives, and he was stopped. So he has tried, I think he's, you know, testing everything. He's throwing a lot of things out there. Some things are being stopped by the judges, others, you know, go through. But at the same time, what we have to look at is that while he's doing all of this, he's also doing all the other things. You know, he goes with his Walk Act, but then he goes with he's very focused on the economy and taking all these measures that I'm sure he might want to help his state, you know, the state of Florida, but he's certainly thinking about, you know, the national stage. And these are things that he will be able to show in an election. And unfortunately, and having worked for more than 12, 13 presidents in Latin America, I can tell you that people get motivated when they vote but things that they think are going to favor them. It's not so much ideology, it's more about, well, what is this candidate going to do for me if he or she gets elected president? So he's, as you said, much more rational. He has everything more planned. He's not a natural speaker, as you know, so he won't go and say things just, you know, everything is very well planned. So it's a completely different type of candidate and leader than Donald Trump is.
And so he's very scripted. He doesn't go off he doesn't go off the message. But have you an idea who it is who's helping him craft this message? Who's found it, you know? This is old politics. Richard Nixon was the one who, as a Quaker and an Northerner, managed to get the Southern vote out with dog whistles. And, you know, since then, the political technology has been refined, and we've got whole hosts of dog whistles blowing now. But there are some key issues, and they're issues that, whether we like it or not, do motivate people.
Yeah.
I mean, he's working in Britain at the moment. All you have to do is to introduce the transgender thing, and people are swinging from the rafters. We're talking about one prisoner in a jail in Scotland that has managed to, the whole issue seems to have overthrown the First Minister of Scotland, of all places. Where, I mean, the men have always worn skirts in Scotland. What's their issue? But sorry about that, but I couldn't resist. But, you know, it just shows what these wedge trigger issues can be and how important they are. And quite often, the democratic proponents miss out the significance for people. I mean, the whole idea of critical race theory was God's gift from liberal academics to the Republicans. I mean, it doesn't exist. Nobody knows who it is or what it is, but it really sounds, and it is, one of those pseudo-academic academic names that are given to reality, you know, that Black people have been discriminated against for 400 years.
Yes.
So you get yourself a professorship and a tenure by calling it critical race theory, and then wonder why the Republicans come and beat you over the head with it.
Well, you know, what is fascinating, again, is that, you know, the country is very divided, as you all said. You know, you're pro, you're against, and each time the divide, it seems to widen more and more. So again, I think what he's doing very, very well, in my view, is that he's going into those divisive topics to attract his base, but then he's giving also all the issues that united. Because let's say most people, I would say the vast majority, want to pay less taxes, right? You know, I don't hear too many people in the research we do that say, oh, I want to pay more taxes. You know, it's the opposite. Most people want to have more money. Most people want to have a better financial, you know, situation. Most people want to start their own business. You know, some people, they want to have the right environment. They want to own a home. They want to have, you know, low crime in the area where they live. So he's going into those topics that he knows, no matter which party you're from, you will be attracted to that. And that's what I think is very good and very well planned. I don't know who is working with him, but I will say I have almost no doubt that everything he's doing, as you said early on, he's doing focus groups, he's doing polls, he's doing testing absolutely everything, something that Trump couldn't do because he wouldn't listen to anyone, as you know. He is not a gifted speaker, orator like, you know, Barack Obama. So he has to be always within the script. And he uses numbers and statistics, so he comes in a way, you know, like Trump never did that. He just talk about feelings and make jokes and trash people. So DeSantis is, again, a different type of politician, and we have to understand that. We don't know yet. It's not clear who is going to be his key opponent from the other side. Is it going to be Joe Biden, or are we going to have other leaders within the party that are going to come up and going to be able to face DeSantis? You know, if it is Biden, the polls are showing that he's ahead of Biden. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I think if I have to do, again, an objective analysis, it's not what I think. You know, it's not that I agree with his ideas. He's doing very well, I would say, DeSantis. And the fact that Donald Trump attack him is even better, because it shows that Donald Trump, you know, he's elevating him.
Sanitizes him with the rational voters.
And he's also, you know, a scare. And we had some billionaires that are supporting DeSantis just coming out and saying, you know, he's a three-time loser. You know, I think the founder of Citadel said that recently about Donald Trump. So it's like, you know,
it says a lot for the, you know, we mentioned it before, because I thought he had much better chances than most of the official commentators at the time, because he does have an instinctive, inherent genius for the politics, for knowing which buttons to push. And he did it instinctively, and they're prepared to overlook a lot. The fact that DeSantis, with 49 billionaires and the rational wing of the Republican Party standing behind him, and most of the media in comparison to Trump, I think it's fairly significant that Donald Trump is doing as well as he is. It's a testament to the man's genius in a way.
Yes, on the other hand, I think, you know, this is something, and you are the expert in media issues, but I started, you know, we follow the media, and we're seeing how the media is, particularly the traditional media that supported Donald Trump, is going more against him. If you look at all the Murdoch media properties, you know, from the Post, the New York Post, to Fox News, they're all going into DeSantis, you know, promoting him, most of them, and then going against Donald Trump. So that's something that I think is going to hurt him. They're presenting him or trying to portray him as a loser. And that's something that you keep hearing, you know, something that he hates, because he always talk about other people being losers. But after the midterms, many of his candidates didn't do that well. So, you know, I think the narrative is changing. The issue is going to be whether or not DeSantis can take on Donald Trump, because he's like, you know, a bully, completely irrational. So far, he's been trying to avoid any direct crash, but, you know, it's going to happen when the debates start, when he, you know, Donald Trump claims that he has information about DeSantis that is very damaging. Who knows what he's gonna come up with. But, you know, these are all things that we don't know yet. I think it's early on. But if we look at what's happening today, Ron DeSantis has the momentum and the upper hand, no doubt, in my view. You know.
Yes, it's we get back to the issues we were talking about before, about how playing to the base. And traditionally, Republican candidates for the last, since Nixon, have done a red raw, you know, raw meat snarling appeal to the base and to the worst instincts of the worst Republicans, because that's what you need to get people motivated in primaries, where you have to swing a small group of people in a not very important and prominent election to win the seat. But then they've usually walked it back. If you remember George H.W. Bush, who sort of talked about Clinton's zombie economics, which was true, but then said, read my lips, no new taxes, thereby tying himself into a hole in order to win the primary. But then he walked it back afterwards. Do you think the signs are that DeSantis isn't going to walk this back, that he's every bit a committed ideologue on all of these cultural issues, from whether it's abortion, transgender, immigrants, lack of rights, all of these things he holds deeply and sincerely to be true. But will he discover them? Will he uncover them, I mean, for the broader electorate? Or will he keep them under wraps until he's until maybe he's in the White House?
Well, my feeling is that he's very pragmatic, and he wants to win the election. He wants to win the primaries, and he's doing everything to do that. But then he wants to win the general election. I think what he's going to do is he's going to, you know, turn down the volume on all the divisive things that may be a challenge for him to achieve his goal. And he's going to turn the volume up on all the things that, as I said before, are a clear winning, like a winner, like, you know, the economy, crime, taxes, what he's done with the state of Florida. And I think he has a lot to show about the state of Florida. And he likes to use the statistics, as, you know, we've seen. So he's going to use those, and he's going to create his own narrative about, you know, from COVID, the economy.
So all those dead bodies never happened.
He's not going to mention the dead bodies.
The adoption of completely quack witch doctors and making them senior officials in the medical health department.
He's not going to talk about that, Ian. He's going to talk about how he quickly, you know, he never closed. You know, he's saying it now. We can see where he's going. He says, you know, I never closed the state. I gave people freedom that they
need. He didn't close the state, but he had to open the cemeteries.
No, definitely. That's something that someone else should be saying, but he's not going to be saying that. Trust me, that's not going to be his.
Well, who is anybody else saying that? That's the point, really. Because what always appalls me is the lack of any effective opposition on either side in this country.
You know, with DEI, we haven't heard. I'm really shocked. I keep, you know, trying to find some leaders to come together and say something about it. I haven't found any of that. You know, I can see a small group of individuals that, you know, voters that are going, you know, and demonstrating in different places, but that's the extent of it. I'm really shocked that we haven't had, you know, business leaders saying, you know, this is unacceptable. And because he tried to do it also, another thing that he tried to do and he failed is that he tried to impose the same thing within businesses, you know, banning DEI being mandatory on corporations and businesses. And he was stopped on that again by the judges. But he tried to do it, but nobody talks about that. Nobody almost knows about that. So he's trying. But I think if he's really a pragmatic, you know, when we work in campaigns, we always said you have to control the debate on a topic that you know you can win. So he is going to know when the general election, you know, he wins the nomination for the Republican Party, that talking about DEI and going after all these minorities, after Blacks, Latinos, is not going to help him at all, you know, in the general election. So he's going to go into the topics that are going to help him, which is, again, the economy and controlling crime, I think.
So looking at it, he's making these sort of anti-Latino, anti-immigrant pitches, and the Latinos are voting for it. So we know there's cultural issues here. There's the abortion issue. There's a, you know, probably antipathy, homophobia that he can appeal to as well. And also, I hate to say it, shared racism, because some of the most racist people in the world are white Cuban exiles, is my experience. And so, you know, he knows where the fault lines are. But how is this playing in the broader? If you're a Mexican immigrant in Texas, you touched on it before. Quite what is it that's going to get you supporting the Republicans and DeSantis? And they do.
Well, I'll tell you, it's pragmatism. It's going to be the fact that I think, as a Mexican immigrant, myself and my children will have better opportunities under a DeSantis administration versus, you know, whoever the candidate is from the Democratic Party. Because, you know, what have they done for me before? I'm still an undocumented person. I don't have any rights because the Democrats haven't done anything. They had opportunities to pass immigration reform. They haven't done it. So it's all like, again, it's like the boyfriend that keeps promising but doesn't deliver.
Because the Democrats are scared of these wedge issues. They'll blow back on them. If they get up there and say, okay, we want to legalize all immigrants, there's going to be a lot of rednecks out there who say that's another reason not to vote for them.
Yes, that's right. But, you know, I personally, and that's a topic for another webinar, I think we can achieve immigration reform without giving everybody citizenship, everybody who has come in this country, you know, who is undocumented. But I think there has to be a way to do something for all these people, which we let them be here, we treat them, you know, not us, but a lot of people, because they don't have rights, they treat them in a very unfair way. We take advantage of them. They do all the jobs that nobody else wants to do. So I have a plan for that I think would work. But, you know, we have to do something.
But you have the ear of a Democratic candidate who you can share this plan with.
Yes, definitely. I would love to if they will listen. But, you know, as you said, it's all politics. But the thing, Ian, that they do is that they promise that they are going to do something for all the undocumented. So as a Latina, you know, obviously I'm not undocumented. But that's a topic that is very close to my heart, even though I'm not suffering from that. I don't have any relatives who are undocumented, but it's very, very close to my heart. But it's also very frustrating to see how politicians use the topic when it's convenient to them, but then they don't do anything about it. So what Latinos are thinking is, and we've done, you know, a lot of research among voters and among Latino voters, and one of the things that surprised me the most was doing research with voters, and someone was, you know, Latino. There were a few Latinos that were, you know, in favor of Trump. And I, you know, said, well, how could you be in favor of Donald Trump? He has said, you know, all Mexicans are rapists. He has said this, that. And they said, and this is what they said, I was appalled. Well, we share his values. And I'm like, which values are you talking about?
And well, according to some of the allegations, you can see where the allegation of rapists might well resonate with Donald Trump. but we have to be careful. I think there's still libel laws here.
What? Donald Trump? But, you know, it's like perceptions are more important than reality, right? But I think in the case of DeSantis, we'll go way beyond, and it goes way beyond that. We saw it again in Florida, where they are voting for him because they think, you know, he's the one that can improve my economic situation, if not my legal status. But, you know, and people that vote, they are not undocumented, so it's not an issue that they personally face.
But there's some totem issues that he's coming in on now. I mean, clearing books out of school libraries, banning books. Not quite banning books yet, but you know, I'm sure there are places in public squares all over Florida being cleared for a burning site. and then there's the attack on Black studies. Now, you mightn't have to support Black studies, but the idea that you ban them being taught, that students, I mean, would he, for example, ban Jewish studies?
Well, that's a great point. I think he will not go there because it will be interesting to analyze which percentage of his billionaire donors are Jewish or not. So I don't think he will go there. But, you know, even if he might...
Well, why isn't it being framed in that way? Why aren't we banning Catholic studies, religious studies in Catholic schools? Why aren't we banning Jewish studies? And why aren't we banning the Mormons?
Nobody's saying anything. And I'm as appalled as you are, because I would have thought that more voices were going to raise and say, look, this is unacceptable. You cannot do this. Because the way he presented too is that he said we shouldn't be using our taxpayers' money on DEI and some other things. But what he did also, which shocked me the most, that I was very surprised, is that you cannot use any funding. If I go and I said, look, I'm going to give you $3 million to this university so you can have a DEI program because I think it's important, they cannot do it. It doesn't matter where the funding comes. He banned it completely. And that's the part I was even more shocked, because I thought, well, he's using this as to say, well, we're not going to use your money for these type of things. And some people might be in agreement, let someone else pay. But no one can pay. So that's, you know, but he's getting away with this because we are not hearing anyone talking in the terms you're talking. Maybe we should get you to be the candidate, you know, Democratic presidential candidate. To be. But it's like...
Promise me a check and I'll put in a bid. It really is a case of reframing the issue. And I mean, this country prides itself on freedom of speech. I know that people do it tongue in cheek because they meant freedom of their speech more often than not the one across the road. But the idea of banning the books from libraries, of banning courses, of saying you can't teach this and you can't teach that, is really anathema to many of the voters he will want to get. So why isn't this issue being put more on a wider scale? I mean, in fact, funnily enough, in Latin America, the autonomy of universities is a serious fighting issue.
Yeah.
Where the army and the police go in fighting the students over it. But here, autonomy of universities in Florida seems to be a joke.
Yes, they, you know, some students have protested and they have complained, but I think given the seriousness of the issue, I could have expected also opinion leaders to come out, you know, in masses and attacking DeSantis with what he's doing. And the other issue is that we don't know, and I was wondering about it, if he becomes president, is he going to try to do the same at a national level? For example, you know, I got an email yesterday for the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and they're doing all these great exhibits in honor of, you know, Black Month, and they're talking about all these issues and, you know, portraying all these Black artists. And it's, you know, it's great. I can't wait to go and see all the things they're doing. Is he as president going to say, no, the Metropolitan Museum of Art cannot do that? Is he going to get to that degree, or is he just using this for the primaries, and then he's gonna let it go? That's what we don't know, you know, what is gonna happen. And
that's, well, that was my disturbing point at the beginning. He is using these in an expedient way politically, but he does seem to be a true believer.
Yes.
And this is where he's at one with the GOP base, which has been building up. I mean, while the Democrats have been fuffing around about who, which is the sexiest looking presidential candidate, the Republicans have been beavering away at the base. They've been taking state houses, county councils. They've been taking town councils. We've seen in Georgia where they've done, you know, a spectacular piece of outrageously racist gerrymandering, carving out an entirely white district with its own judges and police in Jackson, in the state capital. I mean, and they're getting away with it. And why can they get away with it? Because they've already taken the Supreme Court with these tactics all the way through. So, I mean, it almost makes you think that maybe the Democrats should have their own January the 6th, except I wouldn't trust the Democrats to do it. They wouldn't be quite sure who to attack.
Well, but what he's telling you too is, and we look a lot at the issue of DEI, and, you know, if you look at the progress of DEI in corporate America, has been very, very small, no matter what people will tell you, Ian. If you look at Fortune 500 companies, only 8% are female CEOs. So that means that more than 90% are male CEOs, and they tend to be white male CEOs. So,
but a huge proportion of white males are convinced that they've been deprived of promotion.
Yes,
but to give a woman a job, or they've been deprived promotion to give a Black woman a job, or even worse, a Black lesbian woman a job. I mean, this is where the cleverness of prejudice comes in. It does not necessarily have to adhere to facts in any shape or form.
Well, there's a lot of talking. Again, we're going talking versus doing, and there's so much talking about DEI, and, you know, everybody that you talk to, you know, in corporations that are in favor of DEI, they have all these programs, they have all these wonderful things. But, you know, when you look closely at what is happening, very little progress. I do a lot of work on women issues, and I see the statistics, because that's what I believe in, right? I don't go for what corporate CEOs say or corporate leaders say. And when I look at the numbers, it's really, really bad in terms of women issues. We need to make changes at the fastest pace, and it's not happening. But I think again that he's DeSantis is a pragmatic politician, and when it comes time to go, you know, to the general electorate, he's going to put more emphasis on issues that can unite versus issues that can divide the population. So that's my feeling of what he's going to do.
I think you're very optimistic.
No, it's not optimistic because I'm not saying he's going to do that once he becomes president.
Right.
Win the election because I know how politicians think. And he seems to be very structured. So anyone that is advising him, I always try to think, well, if I was advising him, what I would tell him to do. So, you know, any decent advisor will be telling him, yeah, do this now, but then we're going to move into these other topics. And he's already going into that, you know, the economy, the crime, how, you know, Florida is number one on so many things. You know, he shows you the record and how we're doing better in Florida than in California, New York, and many other states that are, you know, liberal states, as he will call them. So
there's a small L, yes. What's DeSantis's chances? Do you think there's any other issues that he's yet to explore and to consolidate the sort of Latino vote behind him?
Well, I think he's doing very well. If I will have to do an analysis of how is he doing so far. And, you know, the New York Times has this great opinion section where they are taking each and every Republican candidate. They started with Nikki Haley and they give the 1 to 10 on whether or not, you know, they are viable candidates. And they keep saying, you know, obviously DeSantis and Trump are the two that are the most viable at this point. And I think he's doing a much better job than Trump, in my view. And he's the one that, you know, everybody wants to be with within the Republican Party, from media to donors to opinion leaders within the party. They all want to be with him. Versus, of course, Trump still continues to have, you know, Trump does better within the Republican Party with people 65 years old and older and also less educated. That's the only two groups where he does better than, much better than DeSantis, and DeSantis said to do better with the other groups. But I think he is doing very well. We have to see if he can keep it together once that Trump start punching him, which I think he's going to start doing it harder and harder because he can see how his momentum is declining and DeSantis keeps going up. And I think he's going to continue with these issues that, you know, he has practically no position, everything to gain with going after these issues. But he's also going to, you know, he has a good record in his state and he's going to start emphasizing that more and more and coming out with different legislation.
But he doesn't actually have a good record in practicality. He's written himself a good record. He presents a good record.
Well, it depending at which numbers. If you look at the economic record and how is the state is doing, it is doing better than many other states. If you look at crime, he claims, again, I haven't looked closely at that, but he claims he's doing much better. It's not hard to do much better than New York, for example, when it comes to crime.
Excuse me, New York is... Once again, this is where statistics, New York is one of the safest cities in the country. Yet everybody has got the impression that it's a very dangerous place to live, and it isn't.
Well, I don't know if it is.
The murder rate here is far less than in most of the Midwest.
But the rate of, you know, crime and robbery has been going up and up in New York City, and is, you know, is taking a toll. People are, like, if you talk, I've conducted, again, a lot of research for candidates in New York City, and it's, you know, the issue that comes over and over and over is safety. People don't feel safe in New York City, at least. And it's something that, you know, you keep hearing in the media, this person was thrown on the subway and killed, the other one was a slap in the face in the middle of the street. And, you know, you start listening to all these things and you start getting...
But it's very much its perceptions, not always borne out by the numbers.
Well, the numbers, even the mayor acknowledged that the numbers are out of control when it comes to crime. And, you know, the numbers keep going up. And it's a problem because, you know, we have a system where it's a small group of people that keep committing the same crimes, but they keep, you know, getting out and they don't go to jail or whatever. You know, that's something that we can discuss about. But it is, there is this feeling of feeling unsafe in New York City. I don't know in Florida how people feel, if they feel more safe or not, but
they're far more likely to be shot in Florida than in New York, because, and then the guns that are being used in New York tend to come up from bloody Florida. So, so much for law abidingness and the numbers. It's not so much the numbers, it's the way you look at them. It's the angle that's taken. And if you allow people to take their particular prismatic angle, then what you get is what we have here.
But I think he can take the numbers and create a very, very, very good narrative. He has, Ian, some very good numbers. And again, we cannot not look at that, because then we're going to be, you know, cheating ourselves, thinking, you know, like many, many people did with Trump, you know, dismiss him and he never be able to win. He's a crazy person. And
no, I think the most worrying thing about DeSantis is he is likely to win, as I thought about Trump as well, by the way. which didn't mean to say that what he was saying made sense or was justified statistically or otherwise.
Of course not. We have to leave the you know, our ideologies aside, and whether or not we agree with him, we know we don't. But he is very thoughtful. He has a very well-planned strategy, in my view. And, you know, he, and I think it's a two-way strategy for his base, the Republican base, and then for the general electorate. And it worked very well in Florida. He won by the largest margin in, I think, the last 40 years, you know, 19 points in Florida. He won in Miami-Dade district. You know, he won in a lot of places, you know, Palm Beach, that weren't traditionally Republicans, and he was able, he won within Latinos. That should be a surprise.
That's the bit that I want to hear more about all of the time. How? Why? How does he do with the African-American vote? This is an interesting one.
Yes, it will be interesting to see how he does now after, you know, everything that he has said. I would like to think he's not going to be doing that well with African Americans, but it will be interesting to see. And as you know, Ian, African Americans and Latinos don't vote as a bloc, so that will not affect him with the Latino vote. So,
well, that, I think that's one of our core, one of the core problems of the Democratic Party is ever since Jesse Jackson, they've assumed that the Rainbow Coalition and the gorgeous mosaic hold together, but, you know, mosaics aren't united. There are lots of little tessera with cement between them. And the rainbows have strong lines. And this is forgotten, that we assume block-like behavior when it's not necessarily to be taken for granted.
Not at all. This is not a rainbow coalition at all. Like, blacks and Latinos don't vote in blocks. So that has been proven and is a fact. So, you know, we may think it will be a good idea because I think we will have more power, but it doesn't happen. So, you know, it's not going to affect him at all in that respect.
So. It's almost a false premise. I'm not going to vote for a WASP simply because he's white. On the contrary, look very closely. Who is this person? Where did they come from? Why? And I wish more Latinos and African Americans had the same. I'm not going to vote for that crook just because he's black. I'm not going to vote for that crook just because his name ends in a vowel.
You know, it happens. I think there are, I worked for Mike Bloomberg when he was running against Ferrer, who would have been the first Latino mayor of New York City. And we knew we couldn't win the election unless we got a significant percentage of, you know, the Latino voters, at least 30%, we ended up getting 40%. But it was very tough because, you know, all the Latinos were like, oh, very nostalgic. We want to have a Latino mayor. But the younger ones and middle age were like, no, absolutely not. I'm going to vote for Bloomberg because he has done so much for us in terms of education, in terms of the economy, in terms of safety. And so they were very pragmatic. So you have the pragmatic voters and then to be the younger voters. And then you have the most, you know, more nostalgic voters, if you want to call them, more ideological voters that oftentimes tend to be older. And, you know, it didn't work for Ferrer. You know, you could have thought, well, everybody, every Latino would be like, I'm going to vote for a Latino, first chance to have a Latino mayor. And it didn't happen. So it doesn't work that way. You would think like every woman will vote for a, you know, Hillary Clinton, or would have voted for Hillary Clinton, but a lot of women didn't like Hillary Clinton. So it goes.
But reviled as traitors to the gender for it. I've never seen such vitriol as Democratic women who thought Hillary Clinton was a conservative and shouldn't be supported.
arise this sentiment, a strong sentiment, particularly about women within the party, and it was, you know, they wouldn't vote for her.
So. Look, we're getting towards the end now. Is there any last-minute questions from anyone? You've all been hiding very quietly out there. If you put it in the chat box quickly, we'll have time before closing. But, I mean, it really is, the whole issue of identity politics is very different because it's not susceptible to sort of rational algorithms.
No, it's not.
Here we go. Frank is, I thought I'd put your question up before, Frank. How much national appeal can DeSantis' funding of diversity officers in Florida State universities have and removing books from libraries? He's getting away with attacks on Black studies, et cetera. I thought we asked that, but please be more explicit.
Well, as I said before, I think he's using that at this stage of his campaign. And, you know, every campaign has different stages. When I work with a presidential candidate, we always focus on what is immediate, which is winning a primary, right? Because if you don't win the primary, you cannot even think about what's coming next. So it's happening in many countries, not only here in the US, that to win the primary, you have to use a strategy that is not going to be under any circumstances the one you use for the general electorate. So I think he's now focusing on that stage. And this is what you're hearing about DEI and banning books and all these things that he's doing. And interestingly enough, he said all these programs discriminate. You know, he's using the terms that we're using, but against the programs. So it is certainly seems to be working for him at this stage. And we'll see whether or not he wins the Republican primary, but if he does, we are going to say, well, it did work. The issue is what happened next. And I think he won't continue with this message. This won't be his platform for the general electorate. That's what I think, because he would
have. But I think the suspicion coming out is that isn't because he's changed his mind, it's because he's going to be expedient in what messages he presents publicly.
Oh, definitely. I'm not thinking that he's going to change his mind or he's going to say, I made a mistake. What I want to say is it's a question of volume. The volume is going to go on all the other topics that he knows he can win. As a candidate, you have to think, what are my winning topics that I can win? What are the topics where I can win, where I have I'm strong about it. I can show that I'm good at that. And what are the topics that people care about it? Because if he talks about a topic that nobody cares about, you know, or is extremely controversial in a general election, it's not going to be favorable to him. And this is not something that we're saying that nobody knows. You know, this is basic. Any consultant would know this. Any politician should.
Every consultant knew that Donald Trump didn't stand a chance.
Well, not every. I'm telling you.
I didn't. But if you look around the world, you have Modi, you have Duterte, you have Bolsonaro. You have examples from all over the world where people get elected despite the received wisdom of the pundits.
Oh, totally. Yeah. There's so many, many examples that we can see. The other thing that we are seeing is that most of those leaders are leaders that go to extreme narratives. And, you know, Bolsonaro is, you know, another example that, you know, we'd have never thought.
Oh, I can see why he feels at home in Florida.
Yes, yes.
Has he been welcomed to the State House yet? Is he a consultant?
Consulting, although he's more in line with Donald Trump. He's the type who would say, I don't think DeSantis would like to have him in his team, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, because it's almost as big an ego and almost as clever. Okay, I think it's time that we should wind up now. I want to thank you, Marcella, if you check out the work that she's been doing on the Latin vote. I mean, if Mike Bloomberg can listen. So can you. And it's been an interesting, somewhat inconclusive discussion, because it's almost quantum. The quantum physics, the positions pop in and out of existence depending on who's wielding and who's observing. And so from the Foreign Press Association, we will be watching this campaign with interest and others. So please sign up for our future briefings, and we will, we're looking for suggestions for speakers. We have a whole lineup of people, including, since we mentioned it, we're trying to get a former Chief Minister of Scotland to explain what's happening there, where the men wore kilts for years and now they're upset about it. And we'll see what else there is to offer. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Marcella, and we'll see you again soon, I hope.
We'll see you soon.